Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, answering some big questions about journalism and our newsroom here at Minnesota Public Radio. I got a series of tweets recently from a listener who said she and her Facebook friends believe NPR News has taken, quote, a hard right when it comes to our political coverage. She speculated that it might be because of what she called funding sources. I thought this was a good opportunity to invite our executive director of NPR News and Programming, Nancy Cassett, back to the show for a discussion about political coverage, journalistic ethics, and more. And as we open the phone lines, I think it would be valuable for Nancy and me to hear from you. Think about this. What does journalistic bias sound like and look like to you? And when you think you're hearing bias, is it often news content that disagrees with your own political views? So I think valuable for Nancy and I to hear what you think you're hearing when it comes to journalistic bias and political bias. But then I would also ask you to reflect on whether, when you think you're hearing bias, is it information that is somewhat oppositional to the political views that you hold? So think about that and call in. We welcome your calls this hour, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter looking at my feed. You're welcome to get to me and Nancy through Twitter at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Nancy Cassett was named Executive Director of NPR News and Programming in March of 2016. You just celebrated your two years. Has it felt like dog years? Has it felt like 10?
Easy.
And is that because the news cycle has been so volatile and so rapid?
Unrelenting.
Yeah.
3 weeks after I sat in the office and took the job, Prince died. And that was April 21st, 2 years ago. And from that day, I felt like it has been a fire hose of news at me, at the newsroom, and just trying to react. And reacting, yeah, that is news, but, you know, we want to be thinking ahead and being a little more impactful. And I find ourselves in the last couple of years just trying to keep our head above water.
Yeah, I think that's something that we should define here. When news is happening in our own community, we want to take the lead on that. But this also feels like a fire hose of news because we're trying to cover as we can the Trump administration and the political landscape and everything that's happening with that, too. And we have to be in the game on that, too.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, actually, is that all of the news coming out of Washington, which we are delivering through our national public radio partnership, sometimes overshadows other important stories we should be covering in the state of Minnesota.
How do you handle that, then?
Well, that is a darn good question. It's an everyday balance. We're a statewide network. That is an opportunity for us and for all of us to serve you out there across the entire state. And the noise of what's happening in Washington is, while of course important, and of course we have to be there, one of the ways that we actually talk about serving the audience is, first of all, is there a local sort of look at the national story that would benefit our audience? How does it affect what's going on in your neighborhood, in your county, in this state? So we do think of those types of stories. But even those, there have been so many of those that we've sort of passed by because in the last couple of weeks, some of these headlines, these would be one of these headlines we'd be focusing on for months. And there are several a day. And as one of our political reporters told me recently, part of the challenge as we march toward our midterm elections, right, in November in Minnesota, which is basically these are unprecedented how many major elections we have in this state. that there's fatigue, probably amongst all of you listening to this. There
Good
is
point.
Fatigue out there. And so how do we break through? How do we help you understand? You know, one of the cornerstones of what we do is we help people make sense of things. There's a lot of complexity going on with, think of healthcare and tax reform. How do we help you? And that is one of our jobs. But we want to say, hey, read us, listen to us, help us. And it's hard.
And we are in some ways part of the noise.
Yes.
But we don't want to only be the noise.
No, we don't.
We want to be the insight.
Right.
Right. In the media landscape where there are a lot of choices that you have. Let me grab a call here from Tyler in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Hey, Tyler. Hi. Good to have you on the line.
Hi. Great to be here.
What are you thinking about here?
So I just think it's interesting, and I think this is kind of what you were hinting at when you were asking for calls, is that a lot of the time when we're talking about political bias with news coverage, we really only talk about bias coming from the other side and don't acknowledge the fact that all of our news sources, regardless of where they come from, are all biased because they're being reported by an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So their own individual's perspective is going to be coming through, and like the certain things that make up the person that they are and the political views that they hold are going to be affected through the news coverage.
I think you're right on with that.
Yeah, I mean, there are humans reporting the news, absolutely. One of the checks, though, checks and balances, Tyler, that we go through, because, you know, and I'm just going to say it, that, you know, public media, left, liberal bias, boy, do I hear that all the time. And this newsroom, we are checking and editing ourselves every day to the best of our ability to be, would I say, center lane or as fair as we can to the voices in a particular story. That's our job.
Which doesn't mean that you will never, especially on the shows I do, that you will never hear discussions with people who hold firm, sometimes passionate opinions about one issue and one side of that issue. The idea is, are we having an intelligent and lively discussion that is advancing your understanding of the issue with people that feel passionately on one side or the other, or are somewhere in the middle of that?
Right. I mean, this show is an example. As you just said, our job is to ask the questions, be curious about what's going on in the world or in our communities. Bring them in. Let's have a conversation. What if we learned something from someone else mm-hmm. that we thought we might not agree with?
Right. Checking your own self. The strength of your own arguments is how I like to think of it.
I
believe it, but how do I know everything there is to know about that?
Of course not.
As I believe it? Right.
Right, right. You know, we have all made a practice, I think particularly in this sort of political season, that we're reading other materials, that we are reading various political views on topics. It's not just, you know, people on the outside thinking, they're just the New York Times. They're reading the New York Times or the Washington Post. And no, we're following people with different viewpoints from on Twitter. I just talked to our political editor about sort of, what is he reading? What mm-hmm. What are some of the reporters reading? This is something that you have to educate yourself in order to be a good reporter.
Let me grab a call here from John in Lake Elmo. Hi, John. Glad you called.
Hi. Glad to be on it. Well, I see the conflict is I'm a lifetime member of the NRA and also more of a rural person.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this conflict between the urban and rural cultures. And it's pretty apparent that public radio is pretty urban. And they talk about the AR-15, and I don't own one because it's a weak little gun that you can't even use for deer hunting. So if you did outlaw them, I don't have one, wouldn't it be the least. But you'd force somebody to shoot somebody with a rifle 3, 4, 10 times more powerful.
John, let me bring you back to, I think you were saying, you don't think that public radio, when you hear the reporting on guns, knows enough about guns because we tend to be urban-centered. Right. And we're not reflective of the place that you live or the more rural perspective. So,
right.
Nancy,
if
I may, John, I'm going to put that to Nancy. And it's actually a really good question because it gets it to us to this issue that came up about I hear NPR News turning right. So initially to what John is saying, Nancy, about us being too urban centric. It's probably true in some ways.
Well, I mean,
right?
we're our studios are in St. Paul, and we have a majority of our reporters in St. Paul. But I would also remind everyone, we have 6 reporters in greater Minnesota. And I won't list all the cities, although maybe it would be helpful. But they're living out in some rural parts. And here's one thing, particularly on the gun topic, is when we talk about reporting on it, if we don't understand it, we need to go get information. And, you know, if there are reporters who have never dealt with anything around the gun issue, they might not get assigned to the story. Maybe somebody else. Or we're bringing in a speaker to the newsroom to explain. It's so complex. How guns work. If you have never been exposed to it, maybe even holding a weapon or a gun, you have no idea. And so part of our job is to figure out what don't we know? How can we be curious about getting those questions out there? So we educate ourselves. And sometimes we hit it and sometimes we miss it.
So, John, I think you're going to be interested in this, kind of how this happened. And Nancy, background on what started with the hard right and why I thought it would be great to have you on the show. I was doing a segment with a data expert and somebody who used to write for 528, and you know that that's a blog where they use a lot of data to, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong, right, especially on politics. But her name was Leah Libresco, and she had done a deep dive with a group of experts about gun control policies in the wake of the Parkland shooting. And her team went out, she did too, to find out what has been the actual results and the evidence from states and communities where gun control policies have been in effect. And we had a lengthy conversation where she said, I came to the conclusion, as somebody who thought I was going into this in favor of gun control policies, I came to the conclusion that they were nowhere near as effective as I thought. And I had to rethink this. So listen to a bit of what she said.
What I care about is, where do we know the most to intervene? 2/3 of the gun deaths, and it's about 33,000 a year in the U.S., are suicide. And the next biggest and relevant categories are domestic violence, and a bit larger than that, about 1 in 5 deaths are young men killing other young men, often in street violence.
Mm-hmm.
And targeting that and protecting those people usually isn't just about making it hard for them to get guns.
So what you hear Leah saying is, I found out that often gun violence is about access to guns and suicide, et cetera, et cetera. The point being for you, I heard from so many angry listeners that she was on the show and that she was talking about having this revelation coming from this data investigation. And this is what prompted this one listener to say, well, we were talking about this on Facebook, and we all agree that NPR News has taken a hard right. What do we do with that?
I would say, no, we're not taking a hard right. No, we're not taking a hard left. No. I actually think that was a very interesting study, and you and I briefly talked about that. But, you know, I mean, we value the facts. And in this situation, this person went out, gathered information, got some facts. And I know that people can say, well, you can read things into facts different ways. I understand that. But it was a conversation. And I can
appreciate... Backed up by some data.
Data, right. You know. But I will tell you, there's not an intentional approach to our news decision-making to be a hard right or a hard left or hard anything.
What I said at the end of that when I read the email was, we're looking for high-quality voices of a lot of different opinions. But it has to be high quality. It has to be backed up
with
knowledge and data and evidence and well-thought-out opinion. And this is why I ask our listeners, when you think you're hearing bias, is it possible that you think you're hearing it because it disagrees with the political views that you already hold?
I think that's a valid question. And in response to all that Twitter conversation, Carrie, did you get any other reaction?
Yes, because then I was on Twitter saying this is what, and I mean, there are many, many people who don't want to hear disagreement about the views that they're holding, or are here to argue that our liberal bias is all over the place and you can hear it every single day. That's kind of why you're here. And like, What do we do with that? Right. Let me grab a call here from Carrie in Faribault. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I just wanted to put in my input. Me and my mom actually listen to NPR, and she's very hard right, and I'm hard left.
It's
the only platform that we can actually listen to together because there's so many calls coming in from different opinions, and they kind of match either one of us. But then, you know, we can actually have somewhere to talk in the middle.
Okay.
And that's the only time we don't fight, actually.
Really?
About all of our different issues.
Wow. Thank you for that call.
Yeah. Let me go to Dave in New Richmond, Wisconsin. Hi, Dave. Thanks for waiting.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I just have a comment. It seems like quite often when I hear newscasts about a police officer-involved shooting, for some reason you guys and other radio and other media outlets always have to include the race of the individuals. It's always the white cop shot the black suspect or vice versa. I don't see how that has any bearing on the situation. It should be a police officer shot a suspect, or a person shot another human being. It seems like they add the race in. It feels like you're fanning the flames, and it makes the story more more dramatic and more powerful than it really needs to be. And I think people get riled up when they hear that.
Nancy, what about why do we disclose the races of in a situation like that?
Yeah, and I would thank you for the call, and I actually. You know, I don't think that every time we're reporting that we say the race. So, you know, I could be corrected on that. But sometimes we do it because race becomes part of the story. And it is in a newscast, of course, you can't answer all the questions. And so that particular medium for that story is rough. But hopefully we will have done our job. And if race becomes part of that story, that we are digging into it and reporting on it so people can get a better sense of what happened.
As it often has been in these shootings where police officers are involved.
Right, right.
Derek says on Twitter, all media outlets, including NPR and MPR, constantly engage in both siderism and false equivalency. If we could stop giving uncriticized voice to extremists and stop equating opinion with peer-reviewed research, perhaps we could have a useful conversation about bias. Eric says, all news agencies have their biases, NPR included. I think NPR would improve its programming by seeking out guests that have genuine disagreement regarding issues. Often I stop listening to shows because two guests agree on everything. I don't get much out of that. Neither do I, Eric. So I hope I'm not doing too much of that on this show.
Actually, that is a perfect, that's the way we should be programming, right? Multiple voices.
Yes.
So we're not just getting agreement.
You're
right.
It's cable boring. News where it's disagreement for the sake of disagreement. We're not headed that direction, I hope.
Or yelling at each other.
Yeah.
But I'll hearken back to something I produced years ago, and it was actually for a television show. And the host walked off the set after it and came up to me and said, that was so boring because everyone agreed. And boy, was that a great lesson for me.
Yeah. Tiffany called to say, I'm a former NBC and CBS journalist. I'm very picky about my news consumption. I'll bet she is.
Yeah.
NPR is one of the only outlets I can still listen to for unbiased coverage. If you've just gotten in on the conversation here, Nancy Cassett is with me in the studio for the hour. She is executive director of NPR News and Programming, has been in the gig for a couple of years. And I got an email from someone in a series of tweets from someone who said, look, I think I'm hearing NPR News taking a hard right. And we thought this was a great opportunity for Nancy to come in and talk about bias. So you know how we decide to cover the stories we do. What are these conversations in the newsroom about bias, about objectivity, about how we're going to cover a specific story? I mean, we've had some political stories here that have been pretty dicey with that. I'm going to talk to Nancy about the Senator Franken issue because we had a lot of criticism from people that were not thrilled about the coverage because they supported Senator Franken. So as you listen to the conversation, talk to me about what journalistic bias sounds like and looks like to you. And when you think you're hearing that bias, is it because it's news content that disagrees with your political views? Take a little look inside on that, too. Be reflective on that. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter, at @CarrieNPR, to Sam in the Twin Cities. Hi, Sam. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you, ladies. I am particularly fascinated by this topic. I'm actually visiting the Twin Cities from Boise, Idaho, and I'm loving the conversation, but I wanted to ask a question from a programming perspective. And it's kind of three parts, and one is predicated on the idea that most of the news reporting, quote unquote news reporting that we receive today is heavily diluted by what I refer to as news entertainment or opinion shows that conflate local events with heavy opinion. So, from a journalistic perspective, I view NPR and public radio in whatever market as being kind of an arbiter of truth and, even-handedness in reporting of news. However, that seems to be shrinking in the larger medium. The second thing is, how do you let that shine through and differentiate it between that news entertainment, and how as a media and journalistic community, do you guys self-police or call out individuals or agencies that are exploiting either partisan positions on either side or false information as genuine news, whether it be InfoWars or
these are great questions. Yeah. Great questions, Sam. I'm glad you're listening while you're in from Idaho. Infotainment first. Entertainment, news. How do we think about that?
Yeah.
Both of us come out of TV. This is not a foreign concept to either of us.
It really isn't. Actually, I working in this newsroom and for public media, so I've been in this job 2 years, but working in the public media for about seven. After 17 years in commercial media, the public radio and public media approach to journalism is so far away from infotainment to the point where as our audience grows, thank you, everyone, and we are serving more people than we ever have, actually, with Minnesota Public Radio News. I'll just have to get that plug in. But some of our research that, says, NPR, so boring, so boring.
We talked about this last time,
we did,
too.
And I had to bring it up because the infotainment, some of that can seem more fun and, just a sexy approach to things. And we don't want to do that. But we also want, I want to be able to break through and get to the important stuff that we need to get to. So we're not going infotainment route, everyone. And we're sticking to what we want to, what we need to be covering. But it's hard.
It's underneath some of what I think Sam is asking too is compelling storytelling of, it isn't the latest royal marriage. It's what's going on with clean water in the state. But can you make that compelling and accessible in the way you're telling the story about it?
Exactly. I mean, let me just say healthcare, tax reform.
Yeah.
Look at the licensing system. I mean, a lot of these things can be perceived as boring, detailed, but it's all really important stuff. So our challenge every day is, as we are serving the audience, how can we best serve? And we talk about which I almost hate this word these days, but which platform serves the story better?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to do a deep dive on healthcare, should we do a question and answer on our website and then tweet it out and put it on Facebook and get the audience, give them access to that, versus doing a very long 10-minute radio piece where someone's going to fall asleep at the wheel. Please don't. But, you know, how do these stories play in, on the different platforms that we're serving every day?
And here's something else that I think Sam was getting to, and I'm seeing this on Twitter. Emily says, I feel NPR News has done a great job of having representation from the right and left when discussing some of the big issues. Do I personally disagree with the right? Yes, but I appreciate it. Then Laura, my frustration on NPR bringing in more right-wing folks for conversations is that they spout false facts, and I count on public radio for facts and in-depth analysis of the truth. Now, I'm going to say, as somebody who moderates a conversation with a lot of different opinions, what you may think you're hearing as false facts are things you disagree with. We never intentionally book anybody who is going to get on the air and for this show, is going to get on the air and just say things that are absolutely not true. Now, are they going to say things that are informed by their own political belief? Like, oh, that latest tax reform bill was fantastic for everybody. Back it up with your evidence and your opinion, and then be prepared to argue that with somebody else who disagrees with you.
Well, here's a question for you, Carrie. So if someone on your show does say something that you know as a journalist that is wrong,
yeah,
do you call them
out? Incumbent on me to call them out. I hope I have the facts in my head at the moment. It's scary. It's a tightrope, right? Like, can I bring just in the moment some facts to that conversation to be able to say, well, what about this and what about that and what about that? Hope I can.
Well, and that's why you have to be well-read to do this job, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's what it requires. So, Laura, as you're listening, I wonder if that's a good answer to what you were asking about. A call here from Rebecca in St. Paul. Hey, Rebecca. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Good to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's actually a couple points, but I'll try one and see what you got time for. The first one is your news director was saying, you know, every day they sort of try and check and make sure there's no liberal bias. Well, I'm kind of wondering, do you check every day to make sure there's no conservative bias either, with the same care that you look to make sure there's no liberal bias?
Rebecca, do you feel like you're hearing conservative bias or conservative views?
Well, I like hearing conservative views, and I appreciate hearing conservative views. But sometimes I have the feeling that NPR leans so far over backwards to make sure they can't be accused of having some liberal bias that they maybe even unintentionally end up with a little bias sometimes in the other direction.
Okay.
And I think it can be anything from what guests are invited to also just in the newsroom. Again, I think there is some of the business of he said, she said, when some of the things that he or she said are not factual.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they keep getting repeated.
Well, yeah, some of that's just going to be opinion, and people get to hold their opinions. But bending over backwards, Rebecca thinks we're going too far with that on the conservative side.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I heard her say that when I was saying what we do every day about looking at the stories and checking ourselves about balance is also kind of a tough word. But, you know, are we representing as many voices on an issue as we can get into a story? But, you know, one of the great things about, I have to say, about public media is that we can do a short story in a newscast. We can do a longer story in the web. We can have a Carrie Miller show where we can go deep on a topic. And I'm hoping that the audience gets to hear different views of these things and different, not views, but different, read these stories in different areas to kind of flesh out the whole story. I mean, that is the blessing and the curse of working in, you know, the multimedia world these days. We have a great opportunity to tell the story in different ways.
Tweet here from Yvonne who says, interesting program. It makes me think about my own biases, i.e. Al Franken's ousting. I want to talk about that because we heard from a lot of listeners, again, with the political bias. you know, people emailing me, and I know Kathy Werzer got this too, you're clearly in favor of Senator Al Franken being run out of the U.S. Senate because they were hearing coverage and they were hearing tough interviews on one side or the other.
Well, I was going to say, I recall after the Kathy Werzer interview, and I sat in the studio with Kathy while she did that interview, and what she was trying to do on that is to get answers. And I think it came off that she was being, some people thought she was disrespectful, that she wasn't listening. And I have to say, as someone who ultimately, I guess she's accountable to, right? I'm her boss. I thought that she was prepared and asked tough questions and was pressing to get him to answer the questions, no matter what his, you know, title of Democrat or Republican would be. And so it was unfortunate, but I mean, I guess in a way it spurred people to engage with us on it, and that's a good thing. But I have to say, I thought she really persevered on that interview.
Nancy Cassett with us in the studio. She's executive director of NPR News and Programming. And Robert says on Twitter, it's interesting listening to people and around this. I've worked or lived in many of the cities people have called in from. In comparison to local radio, NPR is the only station that's even close to even-handed. Local stations are the swamp. To the phones to Chris in Minneapolis. Hey, Chris, thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah, well, and thanks for being self-reflective. I think that's really important.
Okay.
And I'm a sustaining member, which tells
you,
my devotion to the quality of the news you guys produce.
Thank you.
I will say that I have noticed what I consider a left-leaning a tendency in the programming. I also, I mean, I'm sensitive to the fact that it's easier to adjudicate against facts, so hold up against facts and push back against facts. But when it becomes someone's perspective or their opinion, it seems that it gets a bit tougher. I'll give a quick story. On your show, maybe a month ago, you brought on two women who were speaking about some immigration policy that Trump was proposing, and they were very against it. You were calling for other people who have immigration stories like that to call in. I called in and just kind of pushed back a little bit, and which set both your guests off into an argument that America shouldn't have borders because of our history of enslavement and manipulation around the world. To which there was no response from you, and so it just kind of pushed on, and you kind of invited more people on who had immigration stories that were, you know what I mean? So
I do.
I don't know. I know your job is tough, but
Chris, no. This is what this is about, and you clearly listened really closely, which is valuable. So here's how I think about these ongoing discussions about immigration. Just as Nancy was saying, there's a lot of different ways and places and times that we're going to cover particular issues. I think of our immigration coverage on this show, on the discussions that I moderate, as holistic. So you might tune in one day and hear some guests who have a view about the history of immigration in the country and are expressing that view informed, right, by some deep thinking and some facts that they bring to that conversation. And then 2 weeks later, you might hear another discussion about immigration and you'll hear people that disagree. Every time we have a particular guest from a think tank in Washington who supports lowering legal limits on immigration and also supports some of these hard tactics on illegal immigration, I get a lot of mail from people saying, how dare you would put that person on the air? So I think of these immigration discussions as part of kind of a mosaic of coverage on immigration. And that doesn't mean you hear every one of those discussions. I know that. But It's a holistic approach. Nancy, does that get it done in your view?
I think it does get it done. I mean, again, it is, you know, as Chris is listening today, but then doesn't listen for 2 or 3 days and misses maybe another angle or another conversation around the same topic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we're here for, right? And I guess what I would also plug is, listen, we've got our stuff is streamed and is in podcasts and in other forms. I mean, you're going to get maybe a couple views on something today, and then the next day you're going to get something else and you missed it, podcast it and go back and listen and get more of a holistic view of what's going on with those topics, especially the tough ones.
But Chris, I also hear you on when you hear a discussion like that, you want to hear me being more of the, I guess, devil's advocate or pushing back a little bit on some of that. Let me go to another call here from Jennifer in Stillwater. Hey, Jennifer. Hi.
Hi. Yeah. I just wanted to say that I've actually switched largely from public radio to streaming online free speech TV and AM 950, mm-hmm. which is out of the Twin Cities,
uh-huh.
because. You know, like my brother lives in Alaska and he is heavily involved in their public radio. And I was telling him, oh, there's this great show called Democracy Now! And I listened to it on AM 950. And I had never heard of it and it's so great. And he's like, what are you talking about? They play it at 8 a.m. every day here in Valdez, Alaska on Alaska Public Radio.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even know it was a public radio, that public radio had it. And I've been listening to public radio for 20 plus years in Minnesota. So, you know, that's why I switched to AM 950, because they play Democracy Now! And Free Speech TV, and I can stream it online. And you know, because I feel like Minnesota Public Radio has moved to the right, although I do agree with your previous caller, Chris, that there's a lot of identity politics now on NPR and not enough environmental coverage.
Wow.
Because
okay.
The environment, I don't care what color you are, you know, you need clean water.
We're surprised that you've raised the environment, because we've got a clean water project going on right now, Jennifer.
Jennifer, you need to come back to NPR because this is actually our water month, if you can believe it. We've got a major water initiative happening throughout the entire company, and the idea is to raise awareness around water quality in Minnesota, actually, and beyond. But this is actually one of the areas that we are planting a flag on. We have a climate change reporter, as well as a water reporter in central Minnesota, Kirsty Marone, who 80% of her time is reporting on water issues.
I had a question the other day from a friend in Wisconsin, because there was a special election there. And she asked me what the policy is at NPR News on voting and journalists.
Good question. Well, first of all, there are, when you choose to be a journalist, there are things that you can't do.
Such as?
Such as put a political sign in your yard. Attend a campaign fundraiser. Things like that.
What you're saying, I think, is you cannot openly display your preference.
Right.
Through
right.
a fundraiser or a sign.
Correct.
Can you be walking around talking about who you're going to vote for?
No. The thing is that when you commit to being a journalist, which is, I would argue, is a calling, not a job,
mm-hmm.
You're living it 24/7. And in fact, in front of me, I have our NPR News guidelines. It's probably 12 pages. And there are just things that we live by. And I know that there are people who don't vote who are journalists.
Uh-huh. Right. Ben Bradley, the guy that used to run the Washington Post, believes in that. And there are some journalists who take that approach.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, we have this conversation in this newsroom all the time. There have been, think of all the marches that have gone on recently.
Right.
The Women's March, the gun, you know, march with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of the march.
Parkland.
March
for our
lives. March for our lives.
Uh-huh.
There are people who've, you know, how do we cover that? You may not attend that. You may, I believe, as a journalist, observe it because You need to see what's going on in the world.
But you can't be a part of it.
You cannot be a part of it. But the slippery slope on that is, Carrie Miller, if you went to the March for Our Lives you just wanted to go and support it. But if you ended up in a photo and they said, well, look at Carrie Miller. She's demonstrating anti-gun.
Right.
What is that? And we're saying, you know, that is a risk you're taking as a journalist who is serving the audience and to be, you know, in the center lane here as a reporter. We don't want you swooped into that. And so even as a leader who I've said, you may go and observe, but you better not be in a photo and you better not be close to carrying a sign. And these are discussions that we have to have all the time in a newsroom like this.
Paul says on Twitter, I've been a sustaining member of NPR for many years. Thank you, Paul. We go to sleep and wake up with public radio. My only comment is that sometimes I hear a right-leaning turn of phrase or the way a word is used. Language matters. Paul, I work on this constantly.
Yes.
Not to use the cliches because they become shorthand. And I don't think I succeed on that all the time, but thanks for the reminder. He says, keep up the good work. To Ray in Breckenridge, North Dakota. Hey, Ray, thank you so much for waiting.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share with you guys that I think it's interesting that you've got some callers saying that they feel like you guys are starting to lean to the right.
Mm-hmm.
I would consider myself to the right. I'm not extreme right wing, but I would consider myself an evangelical Christian. I'm a blue collar, work for a large railroad company, you know, but I really have enjoyed NPR for the last, you know, 18 years that I've lived in Minnesota.
Thank you.
I think you do a great job in balancing. I don't sense a real heavy bias. I would say at times, if anything, I would notice it leaning to the left a little more than the right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you guys do a great job. And if there was anything I would like to see in the future, when you were, if you're dealing with, say, subjects of religious matters, the one thing I would say is I think that it would be great to hear and have some guests that are not the extreme right, where they're just they're these vitriolic, yelling, shouting, kind of in your face talking heads you see on TV, but just there's still Christians out there that are loving, accepting. They maybe don't agree with certain people's lifestyles, what they do, but they still love those people, and they still are, you know, they're not in the right-wing camp heavily.
I hear you. Not to have the voices of contemporary Christianity to sound like those that often turn up on cable news, let's just say it, to be more selective. Okay. Ray, thanks. Appreciate that. Nancy, I want to ask you about Garrison Keillor, because I know you've been hearing from a lot of, and as I have too, I just recently got another letter about this. We've been covering these sexual harassment allegations in the newsroom. There have been ongoing stories. Will you say something about how the newsroom has decided to approach that story and what that means to the organization as a whole?
Well, I do think that of course I will. There's confusion, I think, out in the audience about NPR News and NPR. And I understand the confusion as someone who was on the outside of this organization before I got in. But NPR News is an independent newsroom. We are separate from the corporate. And I will say my bosses are hands off on this topic. So,
why is that? Maybe you should explain why.
Well, in a situation with someone like Garrison, who, by the way, was retired at the time of all of this, but worked for the company, you know, what happens when something like that gets reported? We are, first of all, we didn't know anything was going on. When we first saw a tweet from Garrison.
We being the
newsroom.
Okay.
So we are now.
Because the organization leaders knew more than the newsroom knew.
Completely.
Okay.
Or definitely more than the newsroom knew. And so when we saw that, we went into our normal coverage mode, which is what happened? How did it happen? Who's responsible? How are we getting this? Let's do it. We are acting like any other newsroom in the Twin Cities or anywhere across America, for that matter, when it comes to a story like this. I would be lying if I didn't say how hard it is to report on your own company.
So towards that, are you satisfied that you have gotten enough transparency from the leaders of the organization as the newsroom working on that story, but also taking into account that this is difficult to cover your own organization?
Right.
Do you feel the leaders have given you enough transparency on this story?
I believe it is. I feel as if now we have gotten more transparency. I think in the early days of the story unfolding, we were really pressing for some more information because the public, the audience, was really wanting to understand, because Garrison had actually put out some information. And so the public narrative was what Garrison was talking mm-hmm. about. So then the question was, well, what are you doing, NPR? And it was very hard. It was NPR, and I make that not NPR News, but Minnesota Public Radio.
The organization.
And so we were asking questions. And I also understand that there are personnel and there are legal reasons that not everybody can talk. So that is a very hard place to be, trying to answer questions and respond to the public and talk to your bosses and ask for answers. It's a really tough spot. And I think our CEO, John McTaggart, eventually did respond to a lot of information a couple months ago now. I've actually lost track because it's sort of been, this has been an ongoing topic,
yes, it has.
Right? So
right.
I feel like we got a lot of answers. And I'm sure there are still things that we have no idea about at this point.
Here's a listener who says, during the height of the Me Too movement, I just lost that. Shoot. Sorry, Twitter's going crazy here.
Oh, no.
I just lost that. Oh, here it is. Connie. During the height of the Me Too movement, the left took a zero tolerance stand and the right took a due process stance. When it came to Garrison Keillor, NPR leadership defaulted to the left. Here's Cora. NPR can always be better and is always striving to do so, which is why I love it so much. Hearing people not perfectly satisfied on all sides suggests to me that you are on the absolute right track. Keep self-reflecting and improving. We depend on it. And to Joshua in Minneapolis. Hey, Joshua, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Of course. Go right ahead.
So I'm a registered libertarian, and I've been listening to NPR for about a decade now.
Uh-huh.
And just, I guess, to kind of dovetail on what the tweet that you just read, there are times when I feel that NPR leans left or when it leans right, and I think that's more a reflection of where I sit on a specific issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of more the nature of having balanced journalism, is that it's going to push you outside of your comfort zone from time to time as a listener, and you have to be okay with that.
And
well
so,
said.
So you're okay. You know when you're feeling kind of uncomfortable with this.
Yeah.
And then how do you respond to that?
I usually listen a little harder, and then if it really bothers me, I'll get online when I get home from work and take a look at the issue, whatever's being talked about that day, and see if I actually am informed in my opinion, and if my irritation is justified, or whether I'm missing information and my irritation is not justified.
Impressive.
Yeah, you're really an engaged news consumer. Glad to have your call, Joshua. Thank you. To Abby in Edina, I want to try to squeeze Abby in here. Hi.
Hi.
Hey. What do you want to say?
I completely agree with what Joshua, the last caller, said. But along those lines, I mean, I really like NPR because sometimes I am uncomfortable. I lean left. But I like hearing all these different opinions. But sometimes, and this isn't just an NPR issue, when you've got a politician, a pundit or an expert on, sometimes we hear just blatant lies. I can think of one that might give away my political views. And I thought about this during the Clinton-Trump debates. I would love to see live fact-checking so that when a politician makes a statement about a budget or Obamacare coverage or holding town meetings or something like that, and they're lying, that you can just kind of confront them on the spot. I don't hear that much of that, just generally speaking. That frustrates
Abby,
me when I'm listening.
If I may, we've got a minute left. I want Nancy to have a chance. We have debates coming up in this midterm. It's a good suggestion. How would we do it?
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, Abby. We are right now trying to figure out, can we commit to doing real-time fact-checking? We did this in the last election, not in 2016, but the previous presidential, I was not here.
Uh-huh.
And the reporter who did it, it was so challenging. Every day, people hated on her. But the truth of the matter is that we have to. That's the holding people accountable, and that is our job, and hopefully we'll get to that.
Was that our wonderful cat Richard who was doing
that? Yes, it was.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, real-time fact-checking. It's a challenge. It's necessary.
We probably need to do it.
And hopefully you'll have the answer for us before the midterm. Nancy, thank you. Please come back.
Of course I will.
Always
it's been
welcome.
A pleasure.
If you missed the show, you can find it on the podcast.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.